Welcome to Nancy's Bookshelf, a weekly program of conversations with regional and national writers from North State Public Radio. Now, here's your host, Nancy Wigman.
Today I'm going to ask Chico author Gail Kimble about a guidebook she wrote during the COVID pandemic. Retired Professor Kimble is author of over 25 books on marriage, on parenting, developing clairvoyant and healing abilities. The book I'm going to ask her about today is Calm, How to Thrive in Challenging Times. Gail Kimble, welcome.
Thank you, Nancy.
Now, I want to ask you about somebody named Barbara Kimble.
Oh, that's my mama. You know, I don't know very many people who can say this, but I had a perfect mother. She was incredible. I feel so blessed. She was an amazing woman because she was raised in a very traditional Baptist family where you did not dance, you did not drink wine, and she grew up to dance and drink wine. She went to USC and UCLA when a lot of women didn't go to college, and then she went to Europe and stayed on in Paris after she went with her sister and her dad after her mother died. And she worked in a dress design house and learned French. And she wanted to be a model, but the charming Frenchman told her, "Mademoiselle, as a gentleman, I find your poitrine very attractive, but not for a model." And then she came home and on a blind date, she met Tom Kimble, and they married when she was 28 and lived happily ever after, except that she got polio. They were in a conference for his business in Lake Tahoe, so she didn't come home from that trip for a long time. She ended up in an iron lung.
I think people may find that hard to believe, such a thing. I find it, even though I lived through that period myself, seeing those photographs and people with iron lungs. So your mother went through, how long was she in an iron lung?
I was a little tiny girl, So I'm not clear, but she got out of it. She was in a wheelchair, and then other of her peers stayed in a wheelchair, but she worked really hard doing physical therapy. She put in pulleys in my brother's bedroom, and she worked. And she had a device where she could drive us around L.A. with her hand controls because her right foot never was able to drive. And this was a woman who loved to ski and dance, square dance, travel. And she didn't let it stop her. And she had been kind of a traditional middle-class housewife. And then she started on a spiritual path. And we had a spiritual teacher that I met through her named Vera Specht, who no one knew. And what that teacher taught, she would always say to you, "Did you take measurement?" In other words, did you learn the karmic lesson from that challenge? So almost every time she'd say, "Did you take measurement?" And so I learned so much from her and my mother's example of positive thinking. So lately, I've been going through all my books and giving them away and organizing them, and I found her book called 50 Ways to Enjoy Life More.
So your mother was actually an author also.
She wrote short kind of inspirational stories for groups like Unity and Church of Religious Science, which is now Centers for Spiritual Enrichment. And she put those stories together in a book, which I don't know if I didn't know about it or I forgot about it, but then I found it doing this sorting process, and I thought, oh, I can honor her and her beauty by putting it so now it's on Amazon and other places, in paper, in ebook, and I'm just finishing up doing an audiobook.
Well, why don't you read us a selection from her, but why don't you read the last page of your mother's book? Again, your mother's name is Barbara Kimble, and the title of this, a spiral-bound book, 50 Ways to Enjoy Life. Would you read us that section?
Can I read the Riptide story?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So this really happened. She's not making this up. A chill of fear stabbed me as I realized I'd become trapped in a deadly riptide. Could I get back to shore? Would anyone see me in time? Were there sharks in these waters? Sheer panic gripped me as I found myself caught in a riptide off of Zuma Beach, California. I'd gone out past the waves and had been swimming joyously in the briny blue Pacific Ocean, not realizing how far out I ventured. And remember, this is after she'd had polio and didn't have all the use of her right leg. So the woman has guts. As I looked back at the shoreline, it looked alarmingly far off. And what was worse, I was being carried out farther by the strong current. I remembered now that this beach had been known to be plagued by riptides, but I'd forgotten it in my eagerness to get back into my beloved ocean after a 10-year absence. I'd learned to swim in the Pacific as a child and had become a strong swimmer. I loved to dive under the breakers and swim for long stretches out past the waves. However, at this moment, terror crowded in on me as I realized my danger. Instinctively, I turned over on my back to float. As I did so, a long-forgotten Bible verse came into my mind with strong definition. Underneath are the everlasting arms. It came as a healing balm. It calmed me down, and a feeling of peace and relaxation came over me. As the panic subsided, I was able to think more clearly. I knew I could float indefinitely if I stayed calm. I knew the real danger for a swimmer in a tight spot is fear. Now I remember my early training. When you're caught in a riptide, swim parallel to the shore. Since the current of the riptide is only about 5 yards wide, you'll be out of it in a few minutes if you keep parallel to the seashore. Over and over, I repeated the verse, "Underneath are the everlasting arms," as I floated on my back. I floated until my full confidence restored, and then I was able to swim out of the current and safely back to the shore with a grateful heart. Terra firma never looked so good. My experience in the riptide taught me the need to trust the Creator in all areas of life. Let go and let God.
This is Chico author Gail Kimball, and she's reading from something that her mother wrote quite a few years ago. And, you know, as you're telling her story, she has every reason to be a depressed person. I mean, look what she went through. And I was shocked by the fact that, maybe it's not so shocking. In your book, you say that the World Health Organization predicts that in 20 years, more people will be affected by depression than any other health problem. And I just know so many people who now are coping with depression. And so I was particularly interested in, and I think listeners will be interested in, what you have to say about depression. What in the world can we do about this? This is a little later in your book, Gail.
Well, what the studies show is that for moderate depression and anxiety, and by the way, there's a youth epidemic, the mental health crisis, which includes anxiety, especially for girls. So what the studies show is meditation, getting centered and taking time to go within, and exercise, and you know this as a yoga teacher, are as effective as medicine and pharmaceuticals for mild depression and anxiety. For someone who's really severely depressed, they definitely need meds to get out of the funk.
Well, these are tips that you offer in a book called Calm, How to Thrive in Challenging Times. And you mention how young people, what they're going through. And so you have kind of a companion book also entitled Calm, Parents and Children, a Guidebook. So people who have children who are coping with depression, particularly these days, it's a sad fact of life, I think, would be interested in your Parents and Children Guidebook, and the title is Calm. So in the book Calm, and you have this lovely picture of the blue sky and blue water on your cover, and it's calming just to look at your cover, Gail.
That was when I was in Hawaii. I took that picture.
Yeah. So this in your section on depression, You said it's natural to get the blues after a breakup in a relationship, a failure at work or school, or times we're disappointed. And some people have chronic ongoing depression. And it might be their brain chemistry. And you said sometimes it runs in families.
Correct. But what I think is important to think about is the brain is plastic. They used to think that our brain ends its changes at around 25. And now they know we can always change our brain. So people who are older, learn a new language, learn a new sport, do crossword puzzles, keep your brain changing and growing. So the same thing is true. If there's a neuronal pattern of depression, that you can change it. And Martin Seligman is the author of Positive Psychology. He got involved in positive psychology when his daughter said, you know, why are you always talking about these negative human behaviors and problems? And so what he points out is that you can take steps, and he has a little acronym for this on page 162, where called PERMA, and he explains what you can do to take action. You can change your thinking. So if something...
You're talking, excuse me, now about brain plasticity.
Correct.
And that's one part, but I'm asking you about depression. And depression impacts our physical health. And you said that a study of 5,000 people with depression showed they had twice the risk of developing cancer compared to people without this mental disorder. And another thing that I think would be of interest to women, that premenopausal women who were depressed had a higher rate of bone loss.
Osteoporosis.
And a 2- to 3-fold higher risk of osteoporosis compared with other women. And I'll bet doctors, their physician doesn't think about that when he's suggesting maybe pharmaceuticals to strengthen bones. And you're saying that this, the National Institute of Mental Health found premenopausal women who were depressed had a higher rate of bone loss and a 2- to 3-fold higher risk of osteoporosis compared with other women.
It's not just that. It's wound healing. People who are depressed, their wounds heal more slowly. They're more likely to get sick, get flu, whatever. So what Seligman does is tell us that we can change the brain chemistry. We can change the body chemistry because the body, mind influence each other. So that PERMA model that I mentioned, P is positive emotions. So if you have a challenge, like my mother, you don't say, oh, I'm wrecked, my life is over, I can't dance or walk normally anymore. You say, what's the spiritual lesson? What can I learn from this? Did I take measurement, as the teacher told us? So I think that's really important key to changing brain chemistry.
Well, I think your book is important because about half the depressed women don't get treatment for the depression.
But not just women, everybody.
But yes, but I was mentioning the fact that they tend to get osteoporosis and their doctor would recommend pharmaceuticals for their bone loss and not necessarily say, well, what about let's deal with your depression?
Right.
Antidepressants don't help people with moderate depression. Antidepressants don't help people with moderate depression, according to
a study
with 700 patients. When they compared with placebo pills, drugs didn't help patients with the most severe depression. So compared to placebos, the drugs didn't help the patients with the most severe depression. And you say in your book, half of the people who take them don't get relief when they take antidepressants. So you're offering us other ways, because antidepressants apparently are not the only answer. Some people do have success with
right.
them. But manufacturers, this is in your book now, manufacturers of antidepressants like Prozac and Paxil haven't published the results of about a third of drug research trials that didn't show results.
Right. That's called a file drawer effect.
Yeah. Well, we don't want people to know this. So
right.
You say that's
but
a good image.
I do want to repeat that people with severe depression are usually helped by pharmaceuticals.
Yeah. And but also, I think your book would be helpful to find, okay, what other things can I do?
Right.
And you say, for example, serotonin boosts a feeling of optimism and enhances sleep. So that brings me to another problem that a lot of people have is insomnia. And so you have a section on how to cope with insomnia. And what suggestions do you have for people with insomnia?
Well, let's just finish that thought that I want to emphasize that our thoughts influence our bodies influence our thoughts. It's a mind-body system. And it's so interesting that the medical establishment ignores the power of placebo and no placebo, although there's a Harvard professor, Ted Kapachuk, who is doing research on placebo. So that's so profound if you think about it. If someone gives me a little red pill, tells me it's going to make me feel better, I'm probably going to feel better, even if I know it's just a little red pill.
Yeah, I think most people are familiar with the studies with placebos. And So
insomnia, what all the studies show is that you do not watch screens before a couple hours before bed. You do not plan your next day and think of all the things you have to do. You can listen to white noise or the sounds of nature to get calm. You could take a relaxing bath. It helps to have a routine so that you go to bed and get up at about the same time. And what helps me if I wake up buzzing in the middle of the night is to go, one, om, peaceful sleep. Two, peaceful and relaxed. So you can bore yourself to sleep. That's my main technique, bore yourself to sleep. Don't let yourself chatter. Keep your mind busy.
Well, one friend says she wakes up and she starts going through what's going on politically in the United States.
Oh, Lord,
and
that's not the right thing to do.
No, but another thing to avoid, so you mentioned, you know, not watching TV, not watching the news, but you also mentioned, besides staying away from TV and other stimulants, as well as alcohol and caffeine a few hours before bed. So I think most people know that maybe drinking highly caffeinated coffee is not a good idea if you're going to bed. But maybe they don't think, well, maybe the alcohol will help me sleep. And you're saying in your book that that's not a good idea.
No, it doesn't help. It interferes with sleep. It may help you get to sleep, but it doesn't help you stay asleep.
My guest is Chico author Gail Kimble, and we'll be back to continue our conversation after a short break. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wiegman. I'm Nancy Wiegman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm back with my guest, Gail Kimble, who tells us about how to remain calm in these challenging times. In this section where you're dealing with specific problems, like depression, insomnia, and there's another one that I thought people might like to hear what you have to say about fatigue.
What I find is that people get fatigued when they try to do too much, feeling overwhelmed, stressed, because I got so much to do, I got so little time to do it. Oh my gosh, how am I going to do all this? Get this kid to school and do their homework and do my job and clean my house. And I think we really live like that. And I want to say as parentheses, that I just got back from a trip to Iceland with my son and grandson, and I never saw anyone stressed or irritated or out of sorts. And I think it's partly because they have free medical care, free higher education. They take care of people so you don't have to be so stressed. So the way to deal with fatigue is to prioritize. So what I suggest to people is you get index cards, write down the tasks that you have to do for the week, put one task per card, put the steps on the back of the card, and then shuffle them. I really need to do this. This one I could hire out. This one I could trade, swap for somebody. This one, I really don't have to do that one. And so you only focus on the number one and number two. Don't worry about the others. Worry is a real cause of fatigue. And we also get fatigued if we eat junk food. And studies show that about half of our food is processed, not real food. So if your body doesn't have fuel, it's going to get tired. So give your body the respect of healthy, wholesome, healthy. The Mediterranean diet, everyone says, is the best. I see that over and over in studies. So eat a Mediterranean diet, get enough sleep, use the power of thought, and ask yourself, will this problem matter in a month or so?
Here's what you list in your book. The main, the self-criticism, hurry sickness, which you were just talking about, trying to do too much, eating junk food. But also you mentioned not enough fun and exercise.
Oh, yes. Yes.
But you know what, too, in that list, because I could see all of those. Yeah, that makes sense. But you said one of the main causes I see in people I work with is procrastination.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, well, do you get tired from procrastination?
Yeah, because you worry.
Because otherwise you're just sitting there maybe in your living room chair, and that doesn't fatigue you, I would think. But you're saying it's the worry about what you are procrastinating.
And if you get something done, you notice you get energy. It's like, oh, okay. And that gives you energy to do the second task, and then you feel more energized. So procrastination is a dangerous habit. Really bad.
My guest is Chico author Gail Kimble. And one, she has written many books, over 25, but we're talking about the one that she wrote during the COVID pandemic when people were stressed about COVID. But now we have a lot of other reasons, maybe not COVID, maybe COVID too. And the title of this book is Calm, How to Thrive in Challenging Times. And there's something that you mentioned in your book too that it comes up in several places. I had a friend whose girlfriend broke up with him, and he was blaming her. And so I asked him, I said, what did you learn? And he replied, well, her dad was dying, and he's saying what was going on with her. I said, and so some time went by, and I asked him again, what did you learn when she broke up with you? He still was making other excuses, blaming her. And finally one day he did, when I said, what did you learn from your girlfriend breaking up with you? And he finally, on that day, I guess, was looking at things the way you would, I think, from reading your book.
Oh, yes.
Saying, yeah, that's what you do. When something...
What's the advantage? What did I learn from this? Did I take measurement?
Yep. And if you do something that didn't work out so well, and well...
I learned. I won't do that again.
And so you're saying that a lot of these things that we think are bad things that happen... I've even thought about COVID now with a little distance. Well, you know, I think that was an advantage. COVID, here's what we learned.
There's a silver lining to the cloud.
Because here's what we learned. And so I think that's one of the main lessons in your book is what did I learn from this experience that maybe not what I would have liked?
No.
Maybe I made a mistake, but what did I learn?
Right, and that's how we grow. So the question is, why are we on this planet? We're here to evolve and grow. We're here to enjoy the creation, and we're here to help others. So we don't learn if you have a cream puff life with no challenges. It's just like, how do you build your muscles? You use stronger and stronger weights that you lift. If you stay with 5 pounds forever, you're not going to build your muscle.
You know, there was a guy, Norman Cousins, you mentioned him in your book, and I think he's interesting. He was a journalist, he was a professor, and he was a world peace advocate. And I like the solution he came up with. He had an illness.
Humor.
Yes.
Laugh your way out of it. Yes. That's great. Because laughing changes your body chemistry. So we are a physical being, and our emotions affect our body, and our bodies affect our emotions.
But when I read about him in your book, you mentioned him and how he injected laughter in and helped his overcome his illness.
He just went to a hotel room, watched funny videos, read funny books, and laughed his way out of his illness.
And then it made me think back to people that helped me laugh, that when we get together, that I probably, if I were just sitting at home in my own living room, I probably wouldn't laugh out loud.
Right.
But I get together with a friend, and I laugh out loud.
Right.
What you describe as a belly laugh.
Yeah, that's great.
And so that's another thing that we can look for. Okay, how can I have enough fun today that it's going to make me laugh? What am I going to do to make me laugh today?
And another thing they find that helps people is helping others.
Yes.
So doing volunteer
yes.
work, the satisfaction of, I helped that old guy cross the road, or
whether he wanted to go or not.
Smiling at a clerk. I'm really working on, in my interactions with people during the day, smiling, giving them attention, saying, oh, how did you get into this job? What motivated you?
You know, you mentioned giving them attention, and something that happened to be this same friend, this comes up in your book, not exactly the same image. His image was a sandwich. That you don't, if you have a criticism of somebody, you don't just get together with them and blurt out the criticism. First, you offer some appreciation.
Mm-hmm.
Then you bring up what's not so good. And then you conclude with appreciation.
And he
calls it a sandwich technique. You're grateful and you're appreciative. Then any criticism you have, and that appreciation should should be more of part of your day than criticism.
And Masters and Johnson pointed out pair bonding is based on the shared memory of good times. So if you're talking to your partner or your kids, why did you do that? You didn't do this. Why is your towel always on the floor? Then that erodes any glue. So that appreciation piece is really important. And I would also add the basic communication emphasis on I messages rather than you messages. So I feel upset and disoriented when
instead
the kitchen
of you did
you're always messy. Yeah. And it's easy to say, I feel you're messy. But that's a disguise you message. So I messages we should always offer a solution. How would it be if we tried this? You didn't like that part of it? Okay, let's negotiate. But I think good solutions, good negotiation, get us to solutions.
My guest is Chico, author of many books, Gail Kimble. And the book we're talking about today is Calm, How to Thrive in Challenging Times. And you mentioned, you label two emotions as being the strongest emotions. And I think people might, it cause them to think, I never thought about that. Do you remember what you said, the two? You said the two strongest emotions are gratitude and love.
Mm.
And you say the most powerful in your book is gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an author, I happened to have interviewed him years ago, who wrote a book called Thanks, How Practicing Gratitude Can Make You Happier. This happened to be Professor Robert Emmons. But he suggests writing a gratitude journal.
And he's done studies, scientific studies of many students and older people, that people who do a gratitude journal as opposed to nothing or focusing on things they didn't like, they have much better outcomes, health, achieving their goals, grades for students. So that comes up a lot, gratitude journal, and people who suggest how to deal with our stresses.
And often you mention a journal. And keeping a gratitude journal is, and some people, I don't want to keep a journal. But if you just take a few minutes, I think, and just think, okay, what are five things I'm grateful for that can shift your thinking from negative thoughts to positive thoughts?
Do that before you go to sleep,
mm-hmm.
as part of your going to sleep routine. brush my teeth, do my gratitudes.
And that might help insomnia.
Oh, right on.
And so during the day, you suggest that we indulge in more praise than criticism.
Yes. And it's really important with kids because kids get criticized a lot.
Oh, yeah.
So in the book, Calm Parents and Children, I include lots of quotes from kids around the world, and they feel like parents don't listen, that they criticize, that they're too busy, that they don't have fun. So I think it's worth approaching parenting from a child's point of view, not just the adult's.
Well, we mentioned that Norman Cousin used laughter to help himself heal. And I was surprised, perhaps, that you say that 3,000 hospitals use imagery to treat pain and speed recovery. And people, Gail, imagery? You mean you can speed recovery with imagery? How is that possible?
Well, let me give you that. So, listener, think about a little pain or a little tension in your body, okay? And then you can give it a number from 1 to 10, how painful, how tense, how uncomfortable. Okay. If it had a shape, what shape would it be? This is a neuro-linguistic programming technique. If it had a color, what color would it have? If it had a smell, and if it had a sound. Now, imagine that we're carrying this four-part image to a tunnel. And as we walk through the tunnel, we change each of the four parts. When we get to the end, we release it. It goes off to the horizon like a little shimmer, and we let it go. So the NLP thinking is that pain is a neural pathway, and if you change the senses, it interrupts the pathway. And another pain technique is to focus on breathing in the middle of it. So if I have a pain in my knee, I'm breathing into my knee as if it were my lungs.
So people who think maybe some of this stuff you're talking about, this is not very scientific. Of course, there have been studies. And I think people would be surprised to know that the U.S. military and the CIA employed clairvoyance. I mean, these are serious organizations. They're not into this hairy-fairy stuff. Why would they employ clairvoyance?
Well, they're called remote viewers. And they were used, like Joe McMonagle was one of the favorite ones. He's written books about it. I interviewed some for my book on the mysteries of knowledge beyond the senses, a guy named Paul Smith. He was a remote viewer. And what they would do is kind of get meditative. They would doodle with a pen. And then the good ones would draw, like, a new Russian submarine. And experts said, oh, no, you can't have a submarine that big. Oh, that's impossible. And then a month later, out comes this submarine. Or they draw an underground missile silo or something. And another man that I interviewed tried it out, who was a skeptic. And the way they did it is someone would go to a place, and then you would remote view where they were. And he saw these machines going round and round. And the person was at a laundromat. And it really surprised him. He's a professor at UC Davis because he got it. So listeners can try that themselves, remote viewing. It's fun.
After a break, Gail Kimball and I will continue our conversation about remaining calm in challenging times. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wigman. Thank you. I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm back with my guest, Gail Kimble, and she has written a book on how to remain calm in these challenging times. Now, you offer people, and you don't charge even for this, healing, and what are the services that you offer? We mentioned earlier that that's one of the things that can help you out of depression, to do community service. And so you might call what you do community service?
Yes, but I love it. It's not a chore.
No.
So every Wednesday in Chico at 1010 Mangrove, we have Reiki practitioners, and I'm a Reiki practitioner as well, but I do chakra balancing, and we have drop-in.
Excuse me, but people might want chakras. What are chakras, in case people don't know what chakras are? And I always, it's chakra, because I had the misfortune, I guess, of studying Sanskrit. Anyway. So you do this for people, you do chakra balancing.
So they're energy centers. It comes from the Sanskrit word for wheel. They're whirling centers of light. It took me to figure out, took me a long time to figure out they were your unconscious mind. We store all our memories and experiences, some people say from past lives. And so I read them and we balance them together. And I'll tell you a fun example is one of the things I do is help people ground, and then I ask Mother Earth, what would you like to say to this person? And she shows me a picture. So she showed me a picture of a bag of M&Ms. And I said that to the young woman I was working with, does this mean anything to you? Because it doesn't to me. And she said, oh, yes, I was in Seattle this weekend with my brother, and I found a bag of M&Ms, and I gave it to him. So it was like a little special treat for them. So Mother Earth, whoever she is, some kind of guide, spiritual entity, showed me M&Ms. So it's amazing.
So when people say, Gail, I don't believe all this stuff you're talking about, but there's an example right there. You had no way of knowing about her connection with M&Ms.
No.
And so I think people, if they are open to, well, like with the CIA, CIA doesn't mess around with airy-fairy stuff. But if it works, yeah, let's hire clairvoyance.
The interesting thing is that PSI research has been done over and over. It's proven effective. They have results way beyond chance. If listeners are interested, I did a trilogy where I interviewed visionary scientists, MDs, and PhDs who do this research. They're called The Mysteries of Reality Healing, Knowledge Beyond Our Senses. And I would go to the Institute of Noetic Sciences because they have done so many studies on the power of thought, the power of healing, that they're way beyond chance. The evidence for psi is very strong. It's only prejudice that gets in the way of that reality.
Well, this reminds me of a quote. You quote in your book, an astronaut happened to be Edgar Mitchell.
He's the founder of IONS.
And he said, there are no unnatural or supernatural phenomena, because people are going to listen to you, Gail, and say, oh, no, that's supernatural. That's not. Anyway,
it is supernatural.
Well, what he says is, we just call them that because these are just very large gaps in our knowledge of what is natural. So if we had more knowledge, we would see, those things are natural. That's why you protested when he said, there are no unnatural or supernatural phenomena, only gaps in our knowledge of what is natural.
And I think that's an important point, because we only know about 5%, really less, of the universe. We don't know what dark energy is. We don't know what dark matter really is. So we need to be humble in our decisions about what's real and not real. I always come back to quantum mechanics, because it explains how you can do clairvoyant work. We may not want to go into that now, but quantum mechanics is science.
My guest is Chico author Gail Kimble. Her book we're discussing, one of her many books, is Calm, How to Thrive in Challenging Times. And I think most people would agree with that. These are challenging
they
times.
They are.
So people might say, okay, Gail, you've been talking about energy, but how can I feel energy? How can I experience energy that you're talking about?
You can do a little simple exercise where you take your palms and rub them together, and then you can gradually pull them apart. Or what I do in my energy tools workshops is I have you patty cake with a partner and then send push or pull, and you can feel it if your hands, if they're pushing or pulling. So you can do little hand exercises like that and feel chi.
Well, if somebody's driving, I wouldn't suggest they try, but if they're sitting and listening, they could just, you rub your palms together and you can feel that little, and people sometimes,
little like taffy.
I think sometimes these things are so subtle that people, oh, well, it's my imagination.
It is subtle.
And so I think you would recommend that they not consider it not real just because it's subtle, that they might talk themselves out of, just imagine that I felt something there in my palms.
Right. And remember, most of the universe is not matter. It's empty, or it's a energy field of in and out probabilities.
Now, you're speaking in and out, and another quality of energy that you mentioned is that energy needs to flow in and out and not be held.
Yes.
So how would somebody know if they were not letting the energy flow in and out?
If you're sick, if you're in pain, if you're tense, if you can't sleep, then you're holding on. I was just working with someone last night who's tense, and I said, why don't we make our hands into fists and then throw out the energy? Qigong does a lot of that, bringing the energy in and releasing it out. The other thing is to do like a body scan. And just kind of pretend you could see your body on a screen in front of you, like a gingerbread outline. You know, how do my feet feel? Oh, they're relaxed and warm. How do my ankles feel? And go up your body.
Again, the title of the book we're talking about is Calm, How to Thrive in Challenging Times. The author is Gail Kimball. She's retired from the university. And people might wonder, well, what department were you in, Gail?
I taught women's studies, and my PhD is in religious studies.
Well, in fact, the reason I would give you a chance to mention that is because I was thinking of your mother raised in a religious household and thinking, well, maybe that had something to do with it. Now, you mentioned deep breathing, and I just want to remind people that that has come up with several things. For example, insomnia, you lying there wishing you'd go to sleep. And take some deep breaths. And you mentioned this several times.
And there's a physiological reason for it. A deep, long exhalation calms the nervous system. If you're breathing shallow and quick, your nervous system thinks, something's happening that's dangerous. I need to be tense. But if there's a long exhalation, that's something we can do anywhere, anytime to calm down. I really suggest long breathing from your belly.
Well, these things that we've been talking about are simple things that people can do.
Breathe, yes.
Breathing is, yeah. And this letting energy flow, and you're talking about a person's body energy, but I happen to be in the Bay Area, and Santa Cruz, I think it was, and was in the health food store, and this woman had a pendulum. She had created a pendulum, and she was holding it over the vegetables. And I knew what she was testing was, I don't want to eat food that's dead and sitting here for weeks and months. I want the freshest, most vital food I can buy. And I think farmer's market, that's another reason you'd want to support your local farmer's market.
Yes.
But she was holding the pendulum over the food to see if it would spin. If this pendulum is set there, well, I don't think this food has much energy in it. But over here, man, it's making the pendulum spin. So this vegetable is vibrant. This is the food I want to put in my body.
Can I tell you a way you can do it without a pendulum?
Yeah.
You can take your dominant pointer finger, hold it over the substance, take the middle finger, press the nail bed of the pointer finger, and you can say your name. So my name is Gail. I test strong. My name is Minnie Mouse. I weaken. So, and you have to always test in the clear, they call it muscle testing, because your meridians and energy field can be switched and blocked. And sometimes I'll test the opposite. I'll test strong on Minnie Mouse and weak on Gale. But if you get it right, then you can, I do that if I'm traveling over water. I got to buy water. The bottle that tests strong with my fingers, I buy.
Because I have seen people hold out an arm. And
chiropractors do that a lot.
Yes, chiropractors test. With holding on an arm, and you say...
You do it yourself.
You do it yourself with just your index finger and middle finger. Well, you have some tips, some guidelines, daily coping guidelines. So what daily coping guidelines do you have? If you want to remind yourself, this is on page 55, these daily coping guidelines.
I'm working on a book now about anxiety and depression and non-pharmaceutical remedies, and I'm working on a book about A to Z healing techniques, and so I have a lot of, I don't remember what's in the old book sometimes.
Well, because this was during COVID that you wrote this.
Okay. This really works for me. Do what's hard for you at your peppy time of day. So it's much easier for me to straighten out my house and do dishes in the morning than the evening. It's a piece of cake in the morning. Break difficult tasks into sections to tackle gradually. And that's the index cards idea. So if I have to write a paper for school, I've got to do a bibliography research. I've got to do this, got to do that. So I had a really difficult Wittgenstein book to read in grad school. I read it 50 pages a day, and the professor said that was one of the best student papers I read, he'd read. Okay, listen to your intuition and pay attention to synchronicities. If you're meditating, if you're listening to your higher voice, synchronicities really speed up, where you just put out the intention and it comes. That happens all the time if you're in the group.
You know, I think it would be nice if doctors, MDs, would listen to intuition, because sometimes the patient would say, "Doctor, I know there's something wrong with my heart." And the doctor would do tests and all the tests that he should do, but didn't show anything. And so I think doctors also should say, "Oh, maybe I should listen to this patient. My intuition is telling me this patient has something here."
Women are more likely to listen. So the study shows women physicians better have better outcomes because they listen.
Well, before we conclude, there's one other thing that has come up, your daily guideline. When you make a mistake, ask what the lesson was.
Did you take measurement?
Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you about these. And I think people would want to just have a copy of this, like to open it at random and say, "Oh, yeah, that, I need to review that."
Or it's audiobook, and Trevor Parks is a great technician who's helping me.
My guest has been Gale Kimball, and her book, Calm, How to Thrive in Challenging Times. Thank you, Gale.
Thank you, Nancy.
And next we have a segment we call The Writer's Room, and it features writers from around the North State.
To the critic who thought I should write more like Hemingway. I like a sentence that sends you roaring up Highway 1, driving a 1964 red Corvette, top down, on a bright summer day, rushing toward New York City, only to have you blow the engine just outside of D.C. Then throws you on a stinking Greyhound bus bound for the coast, with you in the very back seat, where the rumble of the massive diesel engine creates a constant thunder in your ears, shakes your bones, and blots out the sounds of the couple making love under an old Navajo blanket in the seat just in front of you, somewhere between Denver and Cheyenne. David Fillauer.
After Li Po's The River Merchant's Wife, When my hair was auburn, we picked oranges from our tree on Downey Way in Sacramento. You played giraffe, circled the tree several times with your orange picker, and we went on living together, two friends held in the blessing of trust. You seldom angered, held a peaceful countenance. At 40, I daydreamed of our burial plots, your head resting next to mine. Why should I look elsewhere? Barely 40, you were given military orders. You traveled far into the country of burning buildings. You've been gone over a year. Two mourning doves coo near our potting shed. You fumbled with uniform buttons before leaving. Weeds by the gate now choke our flower bed, too many to tug out by hand. October's leaves drop early this year. Monarchs are already at the Monterey coast, some as far as Mexico. I grow melancholy. When you return, write me beforehand, and I'll rush down to the Delta to meet you near Lee's rice fields where we first met. Diana Henning.
The event. The sky overhead was smoky and hot. People knew that they had to hurry. People against the fire they fought. There was panic, chaos, and worry. With all of their strength, fire hoses they'd fling. Homes saved by people in danger. Sirens were heard. Phones wouldn't ring. People helped friends, family, and strangers. Some people cried. Others ran fast. Tears were staining their faces. People now knew, yes, they knew at last, the sadness of losing their places. Fear hit them all, and then they could tell, through smoke, fire, and heat. Stranded in cars and trapped in their hell, a city now facing defeat. They tried to find ways, it was so plain to see, shocked faces as people awoke. From increasing flames, in fear they would flee, surrounded by fire and smoke. Trees would erupt, bark would explode, running from homes that were burning. Cinders and flames to places they'd float, they had to survive while just learning. Again, we can face some dangerous things, knowledge from history learned. Now in calmness once more, we hear the nightingale sing, from disaster, it's knowledge we earn. Mark Mallinger.
For more information on the writers you've just heard, go to mynspr.org and click on the poetry link.
You've been listening to Nancy's Bookshelf, a production of North State Public Radio. You can find this and other episodes of Nancy's Bookshelf on our website, mynspr.org.